Welcome, people, and thank you for tuning in. This is the Sports Underground Podcast with Baron Graff.
And look who's coming up.
Only last week, I murdered a rock. Angela Stone hospitalized a brick. I'm so mean, I make medicine sick.
So let's do what we do tonight.
And now, from the Hotbox Studio in Los Angeles, which is literally an 8x10 box in Baron's garage, here's your host, Baron Graff.
Hey, what is happening, folks? It's the Sports Underground. I'm your host, Baron Graff. Just getting things started here. Welcome. If you're listening live, I'm super stoked about that. Just if you're not, if you're listening to this as a recording, I'm stoked about that too. But just so you know, going forward, Monday nights, Thursday nights when we do the show, you can hear the show live on intrafficradio.com while we broadcast. So that's a pretty cool thing, pretty cool development. I'm here in studio at Bedrock Studios in Los Angeles. I'm here with my man, Ryko. Ryko, what's happening? How you feeling tonight, bro? How you doing, man?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was busy doing technical.
My man, Ryko, running the board for me. I really appreciate that. Got a lot of stuff to get into tonight. Definitely going to be talking Major League Baseball, the World Baseball Classic's going on, but I don't really care about that. There's a baseball official, a well-known name in baseball, that could be on his way out of an organization. Very intriguing story there. I'll get into that in a minute. I know Major League Baseball officials are looking at instant replay in the World Baseball Classic. Got an opinion on that for sure. Bud Selig, notoriously getting stricter and stricter on performance-enhancing drugs. He's got a stance on that. The first female tried out in the NFL. Very exciting stuff to talk about there. The NBA and why. I saw something this weekend, and I never would have thought this about the team that this happened on, or this player for that matter, but when I saw it, I thought, man, that kind of reeks of desperation. That's kind of, it kind of told me a lot about where that team was. I'll talk about that for sure. But just to start things off, in Major League Baseball, a lot of stuff happening with the World Baseball Classic, and people, I guess it started already overseas. Again, I really don't care because here's another thing that bothers me about, I guess I could just start every show with like, here's the latest thing that bugs me about the World Baseball Classic. So there are players that are injured that are not participating in spring training for their teams that are playing in the World Baseball Classic. How does that happen? How does that happen? I don't get it. I don't agree with it. It's crazy to me. And I was just trying to think about this of like, what other sport would this possibly happen in? What other sport every 4 years could you just say, you know what, forget it, we're gonna shut down the season, they're gonna play in this. Literally, the only other sport that's like this is soccer. And I think that Bud Selig started the World Baseball Classic to try to grow the appeal of the sport globally. Here's my problem with this. In soccer, it works. Because soccer is universally popular. It is popular on multiple continents. Realistically, North America is the only continent in which soccer is not popular. Literally everywhere else on Earth, they love soccer. We're the only people that are like, we can kind of take or leave soccer.
Do you have any idea on why that is?
Well, because my personal opinion is because nobody understands the game of soccer here, because if you understand the strategy in soccer, if you understand the real skill in soccer, it can be very intriguing to watch. There's just not a lot of scoring. We're a very results-oriented society in America, and I think that the media that we grew up with has a lot to do with that. We're very much an instant gratification, fast food society. Like, the reason people love football and basketball is because it's instant. Like, you know, okay, you score a basket, that's the objective. You move the ball 3 yards and get a first down, that's an objective. It's bite-sized chunks of an objective that everybody can pay attention to and keep track of. Everybody can, like, cognizantly understand what's happening. Soccer's way more nuanced. It's the same reason I think hockey's not that popular. It's the same reason I think baseball is falling off in popularity. And that's the interesting parallel that I found was, why does the World Cup work? The World Cup works because people care about soccer globally, right? They already care about soccer globally. So for us in American society, we're able to get excited about this thing because it's already got this long tradition and history globally. What Bud Selig's trying to do is exactly the opposite. He's trying to take something that's realistically only been popular in North America, and let's tell the truth, realistically, it's only been popular in North America for about 100 years. It's spread somewhat into South America, into the, you know, the Caribbean, Japan, certainly. But globally, this is not a well-known sport. And I would even argue that in the homeland, in America, the popularity of baseball has widely fallen off. And so to try to push this out to the world now, it's like, hey, why don't you try figuring out how to market it to your fan base? It's roughly the equivalent of like a political party taking a stance that they can't even support with their base and then trying to sell that to the nation. It's like you got to secure your base first. And I think that baseball has done such a poor job of marketing itself to its American fan base that it's kind of odd to me that they're trying so hard to get a world audience.
I think the big problem is that even up until now, it's like baseball. It sort of feels like baseball has been surviving on like a national appeal sort of thing, rather than it hasn't been sold on its own merits the same way football is. It's like baseball's like the American pastime, and like that's the tagline. Whereas with something like football, it's sold like the event of the century, and it's like a. It's more of a about the sport itself.
Well, the interesting thing, too, you're very correct in that, is the interesting thing for me is what people don't realize is that any sport that relies too heavily on its history will fall away to the wayside. A great example of this is boxing. Most people don't know that the sports page, the only reason you have the sports page in a newspaper, boxing. The earliest sports writers only wrote about boxing. Boxing was at some points in time in our history as a culture in America, boxing was the most popular sport there was, and not so far back either. Then the advent of pay-per-view came in. I mean, I even remember as a young man watching some really phenomenal fights on television, on network television, right? But the advent of pay-per-view came along, and boxing became too invested in what they were, and they lost sight of marketing to a new generation. And
that's what football does so well.
Football does it really well, but hasn't always, right? Baseball, I would argue that baseball, in the 40s and 50s, there's a reason it was called America's pastime. In the 40s and 50s, there was no bigger sport. There was no bigger event than the World Series, and you have just these baseball teams and stories from that generation, even into the 60s, of just epic proportions, to the point that when Jackie Robinson desegregated baseball, it was a huge event. Like, it was a monumental event politically. And it kind of talks about what we were talking about in the last show of why I think it would be important if there was, you know, a gay athlete that came out and said they played football, because it has that importance. But baseball, much like boxing, has fallen victim to the fact of they've stopped trying to market themselves to a new generation. The game of baseball itself is very, very interesting. If you understand the strategy of baseball, if you understand the game within the game of baseball, watching a baseball game can be ultimately fascinating. The problem is that the way it's televised is literally, here's the pitcher, here's the batter, maybe you get a shot of the base runner. They're not talking to you in any kinds of strategic terms. The brilliance of football is that the announcers talk to you in strategic terms and tell you, Here's what this team is trying to do. And then they break it down piece by piece. Here's, and so what they've done is they've educated their audience. What baseball has fallen victim to is that they've failed to educate a new generation of fans. And they're not doing themselves any favors by pushing that same product out to the world. If anything, is only going to make it more complicated. I think more complicated to market this sport in Europe, in the Netherlands, I saw, has a team that's on the rise. It's like, how's the average person in Europe going to understand a game that they can't even televise an educated American audience about, where it already has a bedrock and a history? So I still feel the same way about the World Baseball Classic. I'm not interested in it. I understand what Selig's trying to get done, but I just don't think it's the right approach. Another thing going on in baseball that I just categorically disagree with the approach on. The Texas Rangers have been in the news, not prominently, but there's definitely some stuff going on within that Rangers organization. And the rumor is that Nolan Ryan may soon be out in the Dallas market, that they're kind of starting to take away his powers. They've turned over baseball operations to someone else. And you know, he's still got the title of CEO, but with 3 years left on his deal, this certainly wasn't what he had envisioned. And I will defend this. I don't think that you can argue with the product that they've put on the field in Texas. I don't think Nolan Ryan is the problem. And there are sources that are close to the situation that think he's going to be out even before the end of spring training. I think this would be a huge blow for Texas, especially considering that the earliest rumors are that if he goes someplace else, that he may be courted by the Houston organization, for which he also pitched. And they are in desperate need. That team obviously has had several losing bad seasons. They've now just shifted to the American League West. They could really use a new face to their franchise, and let's say it, a new face for their public relations office to draw people to their team. I don't know how you can look at what he's done. I mean, look at where the Rangers were, right? Before Nolan Ryan was there, look at where the Rangers were, not competing for their division, hadn't made the playoffs, never been to the World Series. Now they're a perennial contender, been in the World Series in consecutive years. It's just, I mean, what does the guy have to do? He's made all the right moves, and now they're starting to take it away from him. This is just one of those things that baffles me. It's just, I think at times people lose sight of what's really, really difficult is winning the World Series. Winning a championship in any sport is remarkably difficult, and it has just as much to do with luck as anything. And I earnestly believe that the only goal that any general manager, director of player personnel, whoever's putting the team on the field, their only goal should be, let's put together a group of guys that have a shot at making it to the playoffs. Because once you get to the playoffs, it's a total crapshoot. Anybody can win that thing. We've seen it over and over again. I mean, look at the Cardinals a couple of years ago. They make the playoffs on the last day of the regular season, and they go on to win the World Series. Now, at the beginning of the month, you wouldn't have given that team's a snowball's chance in hell of winning the World Series. 10 games out of the playoffs. There's no way. And they go on. It's a total crapshoot. And Nolan Ryan has put that team in a position to win year after year after year. And this is what happens. It's baffling to me. At some point in time, you have to be okay with that. You have to be okay with, like, hey, we're in this thing. We're rolling the dice. We're taking our shots, you know? And I could not disagree more with the moves that are happening in the Rangers organization right now. Similarly, baseball officials in the World Baseball Classic, they're now looking at instant replay, looking at different camera angles, looking at it. This is one of those things where I disagree, not because I disagree with the idea, but because they're 5 years late to the party. I mean, they've needed replay in baseball for so long. The fact that they've debated for so long about how to get it done, it's just one of these things. I dearly love the game of baseball. I dearly love it. I grew up with it. I've played. I still play it. I love baseball. And to watch it be mismanaged and handled the way it has been, it's just ridiculous. And look, let's say the same thing too. Now Bud Selig is coming out and saying he wants stiffer penalties for performance-enhancing drug offenses. It's like, look, man, you can't be this guy, because let's say it like it is. Bud Selig turned his eye away from the problem when it first started. And he was it's documented. He was well aware that there was a problem with steroids in baseball for many, many years. But he needed steroids in baseball. Bud Selig needed steroids in baseball to save the game of baseball. Because it was after the strike, the season lost to the strike, baseball was struggling, and suddenly, hey, everybody's hitting the ball out of the ballpark. And look at this, McGuire and Sosa, and they're... That saved the game of baseball. And it's a known thing that people were making him aware of the fact that there was a huge problem in the late 90s. He was well aware of it. And he chose not to look closely at it. And now suddenly, 10 years later, when people have forgotten all of the damage that he's done to the game of baseball, now he's saying, well, we got to crack down. We got to get stiff. I have a hard time buying that.
What that sounds like to me is somebody who didn't know how to get the game of baseball, bring it into the new generation, and he went to the easiest route, which is, well, let's make every game super exciting. And then once that eventually wore off, because if every game is like that, then it loses its importance, you know? A home run is a home run because it doesn't happen every game.
Well, so, I mean, you know. I think definitely the surge in offense definitely had an impact and drew an American audience. Like we said, we're very results oriented, and people can comprehend. You hit it over the wall, you touch all four bases, that's one run. Like, people can comprehend that. People have not been educated. It's not that they don't have the ability; it's that they haven't been educated. Of like, here, you've got a runner on first base. You want to hit and run in this situation, or you're going to try to steal a base in this situation, or you're going to bunt to move the run, and here's why. And here's all of this is statistical information that is readily available that could easily be put on television, but they don't do it.
And instead, they boil the game down to its simpler elements, and then they end up hurting it in the long run.
That's exactly it. And so, for me, this is once again too little too late with Bud Selig. I admire the fact that he's trying to clean up the game. I wish he had done it a long time ago. I wish that he had officiated the game better a long time ago so that it didn't get to this point. And now he's finally saying, oh, well, clearly these players aren't responding to the... It's like, yeah, no kidding. It's like, really? You think that's the thing? Now this is where we're at? I don't know. I call me a skeptic. I do agree that it has to be cleaned up. I just don't like the way it's happening. And similarly, in the NFL, they're taking a really hard look right now at the use of HGH by NFL athletes. And I don't think... I don't think... This is kind of like the steroids thing in baseball. Like, look... In the late 90s, you saw the ball flying out of the ballpark, and people would say, oh, the ball's wrapped tighter and this, that, and the other. It was steroids. There's no question about it. And similarly, I would say, if you look at what's happening in the NFL right now, look, you can keep your eyes closed if you want to. Mine are open. Because you look at a guy, and I'm not accusing anybody of anything. I'm just saying this is what I see when I'm watching the sport. You look at these guys getting these catastrophic injuries and making these miraculous comebacks in a very short amount of time. And it's really, really difficult for me to watch that and go, okay, so it takes the normal human being 8 weeks to recover from that, and you're back in four. Like, it just doesn't, the math does not make sense. It doesn't make sense. And I'm not saying that Adrian Peterson cheated, but it does not make sense to see a guy completely tear up his knee And then less than a year later, he's competing and running at the level that he was. It doesn't make sense. I'm not saying it's the case with every single athlete, but you're seeing it happen over and over and over again with multiple athletes. And they're, it's like every week there's a guy who's coming back earlier and earlier. And it's just, I look at that and it just doesn't add up to me. Without some sort of assistance from the outside, that doesn't add up. And so I don't think there's any question that reform has to happen. But the difficulty is, now, how does that reform occur? And currently what's at issue is the players' union agrees that they need testing in place for this. They want a level playing field. But they're saying, hey, we have to set benchmarks. Like, if you're going to do blood testing, we have to set benchmarks because the NFL athlete is unlike other athletes in the world. They're an elite athlete. Fine. I got all that. And what the NFL is essentially saying is, why? Why do we've got those benchmarks already set. We've got benchmarks set with Olympic weightlifters, with other Olympic athletes. These benchmarks are already in place. And the players' union is going, wait, but that's not our sport. You have to. So this is like a bone of contention. So this thing's been moving in fits and starts. And the problem that I have right now with what's happening with HGH testing is that it looks like Congress is going to start getting involved in this, which I have a huge problem with. And I don't have a problem with it necessarily because I don't think it's a good idea to have a third party mediate in a situation like this. I just don't know why we're spending tax dollars to do it. Actually, I do have a theory as to why that's happening. Nobody wants to talk about the real problems that are occurring in our world. Nobody wants to pay attention to the horrible mismanagement of our country's finances that are currently occurring. Nobody wants to talk about that. So instead, they're going to try to distract you. And they're going to try to distract you by putting on a show and lining up 12 congressmen and sitting there and asking really tough questions and putting on this face like, we're really interested in this because this has to do with America's future. And we want to know what's going on. We want to set the right example for our kids.
If it's one thing, then people won't be talking about anything else.
And my point is this. If you want to set a good example for your kids, balance your checkbook. That's it. Like, you want to set a good example. Let's not talk about how many athletes make millions of dollars and come away with it with nothing to show for it. Literally, a couple of years after they're done with the sport, they're broke. Let's not talk about that. Let's completely gloss over the fact that these guys are making more money than they know what to do with, yet somehow when it's all done, they don't have any money. Nobody wants to look at it, and that's what's going on. So that's it. Stick around after the break. Gonna get into basketball on the back end of the show. Gonna talk NBA. Gonna talk college basketball a little bit. And we're gonna talk about the female kicker that broke the barrier in the NFL as the first female to try out for an open tryout in the NFL. In Chains for you. No big deal, in case you've heard of that band. I don't know if you have or not.
That's one band I can get behind.
There you go. I've got Ryko's endorsement. Everybody's
found common ground.
Hey, look, I've not disputed any of your musical choices. It might be a little more mellow than the audience is used to, but hey, I take no issue with it. Listen, here's my point. If you came to this show for the music, yeah, that is the definition of a low payoff activity.
Yeah, you came for about 45 seconds.
You waited 20 minutes to hear 45 seconds, and now you're gone.
But if you did, you must trust our musical taste a whole lot, so thanks.
Exactly. So did you read the story about the girl that broke the barrier in the NFL? She tried out for not the actual combine, but one of the regional they have like these open tryouts where just anybody can go try out. And there was this this girl who went to try out at one of these combines, and she was a kicker. And it's significant because no female has ever tried out for the NFL. And she went to a regional combine. The woman's name is Lauren Silberman. And this is an interesting thing because I completely support the whole Title IX movement. And, you know, I think I've been very open about the fact that I think that this is great to see stuff like this. I'm not sure if this was the right way for it to happen, though, because here's the challenge, right? The challenge isn't that she did anything wrong, okay? She was hurt. So when she actually went to do this tryout, her leg was hurt, and she wasn't able to kick. She only kicked twice, and neither one of them were very good. Here's the problem. When she's hurt, she's in a tough position, right? Because of the nature of the NFL. If she's hurt and she doesn't go do the tryout, then every skeptic out there is going to say, yep, see, women aren't tough enough to play in the NFL. You got to play hurt in the NFL. If you can't, hey, listen, she hurt her quadricep on her kicking leg. Like any kicker in the NFL wouldn't be able to do this. Okay, so that's not a fair thing. But if she hadn't gone and tried, that would have been the criticism. Now, the unfortunate part is now what's going to happen is people are going to go, did you see the girl that tried out for the NFL? Yeah, she only kicked the ball like 20 yards. And they're going to take that tact on it, right? So that's the problem, is now that's what you're faced with, is now people are going to completely gloss over the fact that she was hurt. And they're just, she only kicked the ball 20 yards. This will never work in the NFL. I don't know. I don't know if we're that far away. I could easily see, especially she's a former club soccer player from Wisconsin. You got to remember, there was a time in the NFL when Europeans were coming over and the soccer style field goal kickers were coming over, and there were skeptics then. Oh, this will never work. This is never going to happen. There are always skeptics to progress. My point is, let's look at it from another angle. Like, really? Hey, you know, Ray Lewis has daughters. You really don't think maybe Ray Lewis's daughters have some natural ability that's in their genetics that might help them play football? Maybe, possibly. I mean, look, Leila Ali, Muhammad Ali's daughter, she's a boxer. Like, you really think that just because you have a penis, you want to get in the ring with her? I mean, do the math here. Like, some of this stuff is like, it's not that difficult to figure out. And I would argue that if a girl has played soccer her whole life and she was good enough to play at a Division I school like Wisconsin, I mean, it stands to reason that she might have a decent shot as a place kicker in the NFL. It could possibly. I think that that's something that we're going to see probably not before too long. And so I personally applaud her for going and doing this. I applaud her for trying to do it while hurt. I just, unfortunately, I don't think that's how the story is going to come out. And I do think that's sad. Nonetheless, that's the story. That's the spin everybody's going to put on it. Another story that's getting a lot of run right now over in the NBA. Did you see what happened between the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Los Angeles Clippers over the weekend? If you didn't catch this, look, OKC won the game, and that's not the issue. They swept the Clippers this year. They're a game and a half, I think, the last time I heard, they're like a game and a half ahead of the Clippers for that final playoffs or the second playoff spot in the West. But the bigger issue is that during the game, Serge Ibaka of the Oklahoma City Thunder, he hit the Clippers Blake Griffin in a place you just shouldn't hit a dude. Like that's just dirty pool. Like you can't do it. It's chintzy. It's poor sportsmanship to be sure. The crazy thing is if you watch the play, he's trying to stop Blake Griffin from getting a rebound. The first thing he does is grab him by the wrist, and then he hits him in the moneymaker. It's like, dude, that's pretty bad. Like, that's that. You're just basically saying, like, I can't beat this guy fair and square. I'm just going to do this instead. And that's an interesting thing for me because I'm looking at this team, and listen, Serge Ibaka is like, he's one of the better defenders on that Oklahoma City team. And looking at the Clippers, they're a very athletic team. They most closely resemble in athleticism Oklahoma City as any team in the West right now. And so when I see guys doing stuff like that, to me, that does not strike me as a confident basketball team. If you're willing to do that, that to me smacks of desperation a little bit, which is an odd thing to say considering they've beaten the Clippers every time that they've played this year. But it looks to me, I don't know how else to read that except for we don't think that we can beat you fair and square, so we're going to play dirty. I don't know what other possible takeaway could you have from that? Other than I just wanted to hit Blake Griffin in the nuts. Like what on earth would possess you to do that unless you just literally think, like, I can't contain this guy, I have to cheat. It's the only takeaway that I can bring from it. Griffin went down. Serge Ibaka, you know, got hit with a flagrant one. I think, you know, clearly probably should have been a flagrant two, if you get my meaning. I don't see how they can't suspend him for that. You have to suspend the guy for that. You have to send him down at least a game for that. I don't know. I'll tell you what. The person that had the most interesting take on it, I think, was Kobe Bryant. And they asked Kobe Bryant about it in an interview after a game. They went to Kobe and they said, hey, you know, did you see what happened with Blake Griffin and Serge Ibaka? And, you know, they just kind of asked him about it, like, hey, what did you think? And look, what I love about Kobe now is he's not afraid to pull a punch. So he'll just tell you what he thinks whenever he thinks it.
Serge was hit last night by any chance on Blake Griffin?
Yeah.
What did you think about that?
I probably would have smacked him in the mouth.
All right.
On your way down. That's tough. On your way down the floor. That's
I would have dealt with the pain after.
Good old Kobe. I would have smacked him in the mouth. That's going to play well. That is going to play well the next time the Thunder and the Lakers face off. Let me tell you. The Lakers, with the win over the weekend, they're at 30-30. They're at 500 for the first time in a very long time. They're still on the outside looking in at the last playoff spot in the West. I think they've been playing better lately. They've got a really tough road to hoe. They got a lot of games on the road. But look, I don't think that there is a more interesting story in the NBA than the Los Angeles Lakers right now. And I'm not just saying that because I live in Los Angeles. If this train wreck was happening anywhere in the league, I would say this is the most interesting thing going on. Because you look at the amount of money that they have tied up in their salary. You look at how little ability that they have to move anybody right now. And it's absolutely fast. It's riveting. Like, they can't move anybody. There's nothing they can do from a personnel perspective. They literally have to take the guys they have and make a run. And all of these guys have different motivations, different reasons for why they are or aren't doing things. It's like, you can't find, like, find me the show on television that delivers this level of drama. Like, please, like, no reality show is as good as this. None. Like, there's just not better reality television right now than the Los Angeles Lakers. It's if you haven't seen it, make sure you check it out. Another interesting thing going on. There's this big flap going on about LeBron James and the dunk contest because LeBron James has been throwing down in pregame warmups lately. He's been throwing the yak in pregame warmups, and in a big way. And it's wildly entertaining. Earlier this week, Magic Johnson said on television that he would pay $1 million for LeBron to compete in the dunk contest. Tony Kornheiser on ESPN said he'd pay $2,000 to see it. Yeah, that's probably not going to make a big difference. I'm just going to go ahead and guess that for LeBron James, sorry, it's Skip Bayless said this on ESPN, that he'd pay $2,000 for LeBron to compete in the dunk contest. I'm going to go ahead and guess that it's probably not going to be that intriguing for a guy who's pulling down the kind of money, you know, $17.5 million a year, probably $2,000. He probably loses that in the couch. You know, I don't think your $2,000 is going to put him over the edge there, Skip. But I do think it's intriguing. And I actually heard an interview with former Pistons head coach Flip Saunders on the radio this morning. And he had an interesting take on the dunk contest. He said, take LeBron James and Blake Griffin, get a couple of players and give them 2 minutes, and they can put together their own music package. They essentially choreograph 2 minutes worth of dunks, and they're judged based on their creativity, based on their execution, much like an Olympic gymnastics event, if you will. And I think that's a wildly entertaining idea. It's way more entertaining than six guys I've never heard of dunking. Like, it's way more entertaining than that's going to be. And I would only add the following caveat. You know, every year before the dunk contest, they have the open call. It's just outside of the arena, they have a dunk contest, and it's the amateur dunk contest. And if you haven't seen these guys throw down, go find it on YouTube, because these guys are wildly entertaining, and they don't have a $1 million contract that they're playing for. They're not concerned about blowing out their ACL, and they are doing some really, really amazing stuff. Stuff that you just don't see in the regular dunk contest. I say take the winner of that dunk contest, put him in with the other two guys, give them each their own two-minute routine, let the judges judge, and just see what happens. I would definitely watch on Saturday for that. I would definitely tune in for that. Tune in for the Miami Heat, by the way, if you haven't seen them play recently, because that is a fascinating team. They were on the road in New York over the weekend. They were down big to the Knicks. They found a way to come back. They found a way to put it together. A game they should lose and they win. I keep saying it. I don't see a team like Miami out there right now. I don't see a team winning games that they should lose on the road like Miami right now. They're just not around. It's just they are the class of the league, and anybody who wants to ignore that can. But I told you first. But I told you. Just remember that. College basketball, I'm just going to touch on this briefly because I kind of feel like I've beaten this to the ground. Gonzaga, the number one team in the country right now. Just let that resonate. Gonzaga, perennial Cinderella, perennial team that you don't expect to do well. They're the number one team in the country right now. I don't think, if I'm Mark Few, if I'm the head coach at Gonzaga, I really don't like this position. I really don't like being the number one team in the nation if I'm them. I think for them it's way, way better for them to stay a little bit more under the radar, to stay in the background, and to have the ability to go out and hurt somebody that's not expecting it. It's going to be interesting to see how they handle it. I liken Gonzaga's position right now kind of similar to where Duke basketball was in the mid-80s. Before the big blow-up, before Duke basketball was what you know it to be right now. Because people forget this. Duke was an academic institution with zero athletic history. Like, no athletic history in their program. I mean, nobody had heard of Duke basketball when Mike Krzyzewski got there. He built that program from the ground up. And so it's kind of similar in Gonzaga. Gonzaga did not have a long storied tradition before their most recent resurgence. So this is an interesting crossroads for this program. Are they going to go the direction of Duke and become a perennial contender? Or is this like the top of the mountain and we're just going to plummet from here? It's going to be one of the more interesting things to watch as we come down the stretch in college basketball, just a few weeks before the big tournament and Selection Sunday and all that stuff gets started. We'll do the bracket challenge again this year. We had fun with that last year. Hopefully a few more people compete, but we'll definitely do that. So that's the show. I hope you guys have enjoyed it. If you listen live, thanks for tuning in intrafficradio.com. If you're listening to the recording, check out the live show sometime just for fun. You can always find us on the Facebook fan page. I always appreciate new folks joining that. My man Riley Kohler here. Riley, thanks so much for jumping on again tonight.
Hey, I'm always glad to be here.
And that's it. That's the show. Whatever you guys do this week, do me one thing. Keep right.
You have been listening to the Sports Underground Podcast. And you know we always welcome your take. You can find the Sports Underground on Facebook, so go ahead and like it. If you want to download, hit us up on iTunes. And remember, come back again next time and get some.